Hi, friends, and welcome back to yet another installment of Professor Pastor Paul's Midweek Bible Festival. Good to see you all. Hope you're doing well this week. The next 2 weeks, we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to join back up with David in the lectionary after these next 2 weeks. But for these next 2 weeks, I'm going to address a question. It's kind of a specialty thing of mine, and I hope you enjoy it. It addresses a question that I think is actually quite relevant in sort of a personal way. What I mean is it addresses it in a personal way. The problem is this. We as Christians are beholden to a book which is thousands of years old and which was written over centuries in many different cultural contexts. But what I want to focus on are those centuries, that time that has elapsed since then, and how things are, in many ways, are quite different today than they were back when the book was written for its intended audience. I am not convinced that the Bible was written with us in mind. I think it was written, for example, the letters of Paul were written for a particular purpose. The book of Proverbs was written for a particular purpose. The book of Genesis and so forth and so on. But they were written at a specific time from a specific cultural context and for a particular purpose. Now, I do think, of course, as you probably know, that it doesn't mean that the Bible is not useful to us, right? That it's not true in some deep sense. Of course it is. That's why we continue to read it every week, and that's why I continue to produce Bible studies every week. But there is a gap between it and us. And sometimes that gap can be hard to cross. And what I'm thinking about now as a scientist is the gap of our scientific knowledge between the time the Bible was written and now. So what I'm going to do over the next 2 weeks is sort of outline a way of thinking about how to read the Bible given what we know about science and so forth. How we might do that. And you can sort of think about it, the title might be something like A Scientist Reads the Bible. Now, you're not all scientists, of course. But the question of how to read the Bible in a scientific age is one that we all deal with because we all live in a scientific age. So the next two Bible studies are going to address this in ways that I hope are educational and even at points amusing to you. And I should also sort of say that these two Bible studies are sort of adapted from out of, it's not identical to my last book, but they're adapted out of a chapter from my last book. I hope you enjoy it, and let's get started. I'm going to start tonight with this fellow named Mad Mike Hughes. Now, Mad Mike Hughes, you might not know who he is, but he's a California limousine driver who, on March 24th, 2018, launched himself 1,875 feet above the Mojave Desert in a homemade steam-powered rocket. Now, why did he do that? Well, he did it. His goal was to get high enough above the surface of the Earth in order to see or not see that the Earth is not flat, that the Earth is curved. So he made it up 1,875 feet. Alas for him, commercial aircraft flying more than 20 times his maximum height themselves do not go high enough for passengers to detect the curve of the Earth. Only military pilots and astronauts reach the required altitudes of more than 50,000 feet. In other words, Mike Hughes, Mad Mike Hughes is his nickname, Mad Mike Hughes, is one of a new group of people who are insisting the Earth is flat, and he wanted to get up high enough in his rocket so he could prove that. He has company, turns out, lately over the last 10 years, as conspiracy theories have grown and grown and multiplied, he's got some company. The number of flat earthers has ticked upwards over the last several years. Flat earthers being people who believe the earth is flat. Certain celebrities are certified flat earth believers, while others have come out as flat curious. And according to the Denver Post, flat earth groups have begun meeting in coffee bars and private homes in Denver, Boston, New York, Houston, Philadelphia, Phoenix, and Chicago. The second annual Flat Earth International Conference took place in Denver in November 2018, and another one happened last year, I think, in Dallas or Houston. Now, friends, if you know me, you will understand that I cannot adequately express my dismay at this trend. And yes, we're getting around to the Bible, so stay with me. Unlike many ideas in science, the idea that the Earth is round is easily proved, and you don't even need to launch yourself into space to do it. Just take a pair of binoculars to any large body of water and watch a boat sail away from you. Through the binoculars, you'll see that the ship's hull disappears first as it goes behind down off the curve of the Earth. The highest part of the ship will be seen last. So you'll see the hull of the ship disappear first, and then the mast or the sails go down as the boat sort of falls away around the curve of the Earth. And this will happen no matter what direction it sails. In no case will the boat simply shrink to a point as it would if the Earth were flat. Now, it was Aristotle, almost 300 years before Jesus walked the Earth, who was the first to provide a full scientific argument in favor of a spherical Earth. In other words, we have known the Earth is round since at least 250, 300 BC. Okay. Columbus knew the world was round. Aristotle's claim that the Earth was round was based on three independent observations, one from the sailing ship I just described to you, and two from astronomy. He composed this argument, like I said, hundreds of years before Jesus was born, and it still stands as a beautifully articulated and easily understood scientific theory. Folks, the world is round. Mad Mike Hughes and other flat earthers have managed to ignore somehow 24 centuries of the most basic science. But, and here we're coming around to the Bible, in their view of the universe, they have esteemed company. Mad Mike Hughes has esteemed company, the authors of Genesis 1. The first book of the Bible describes the cosmos as envisioned by the ancient Israelites and as a cosmos centered on a very flat earth. You will remember, shortly after the breath of God moves across the waters and the first light explodes into existence, a dome or firmament separates the waters from the waters. God calls this dome sky before dry land emerges from the waters below the dome. Then plants, sun and moon and stars, fish, birds, animals, and people are added to the scene. Further along in scripture, beyond Genesis, pillars of the heavens and earth are thrown in and the underworld too. The whole thing looks like a hemispherical bubble floating in the universe of water. I got a picture here for you. Let me see this. Looks something like that. Hope you can see that. Okay. But the earth in the Bible is a flat earth, just like Mad Mike Hughes dreams that it is. Now, the differences between the biblical cosmos and ours cannot be overstated. There is virtually no similarity between the cosmos as described in Genesis and the one that we know about today. If the Bible were intended to be a science book, we would have thrown it out years ago, centuries ago. But let's be frank, this makes it very hard to see why science matters at all when we read the Bible. And in a certain very narrow sense, science doesn't matter when we read the Bible. No matter what theory scientists come up with, if God ever loved us, God will love us still. If Jesus ever mattered, Jesus will matter still. And if justice and reconciliation were ever our calling, they will be our calling still. It seems that the shape of the universe has nothing to do with our daily human experience of God and one another. And that's why we haven't thrown the Bible out. Right? But we live in a scientific age. We do not read our Bibles on a flat earth under a transparent dome, but on a spherical planet orbiting a star revolving around the center of a vast galactic pinwheel, turning among black holes and quasars. These are the things God has made. Now, here's the point. We cannot set aside what we know and what we love when we sit down with Scripture, nor are we asked to. So if we know about all of this crazy stuff out in our evolving cosmos, we can't put that aside when we read Scripture, nor are we asked to. Jesus commands us to love God with all of our mind as well as with our heart, soul, and strength. There is such a thing as the scientific love of God. Those who wish to take both science and faith seriously must hold the Bible in one hand and Scientific American or any other reputable journal in the other. Science, in its proper context, deepens and enlarges everything it touches. The night sky provides a perfect example. And as we'll see in a moment, science will deepen and enlarge our reading of the Bible. But to give you an idea of what I mean by deepen and enlarge, imagine this, the night sky. Its beauty is available to all of us, but an astronomer looking at the sky, one who knows some astronomy, sees all the beauty that the non-specialist sees and more. She sees the moon in the east and imagines its gradual outward spiral. Did you know that the moon is spiraling away from us? It's true. She sees a string of planets, Saturn, Mars, Venus, and Mercury, like a diamond necklace running downward toward the western horizon. She knows that Jupiter, Uranus, and Neptune turn under her feet. She gains a palpable sense of Earth's place and motion through the tilted, turning solar system. These things sit in the foreground like bugs on a windshield compared with the stars beyond and the long arc of the circling galaxy, and she sees all of it at once. It's all in motion, and every piece of this panorama evokes wonder and teases her with new questions. That's what the scientist sees when she looks at the heavens, more than the untrained eye will see. And so there's more questions, there's more wonder. Science only increases wonder. Now, something similar happens when a biblical scholar reads the Bible. Like the stars on a clear night, the words sit there on the page of the Bible, freely available to all. But depth beyond depth is revealed to those who have read Scripture closely for years, learned the original languages, studied its history and culture of the ancient Near East, and become acquainted with biblical theology and the history of biblical interpretation. The more you know, the more you see, and the more questions occur to you. So science expands the world in the same way that a knowledge of Scripture and history and culture of the Bible expands your reading of the Bible. Now, the question is, what happens when a scientist reads the Bible? Well, it depends on the scientist, doesn't it? Some scientists dismiss the Bible outright, for Scripture has little to say about science as we know it today. But for me, a scientist who has not rejected the Bible, a fascinating new set of connections opens up, connections not available to non-scientists. When I read Scripture, I draw on three resources. First, I have the words on the page, as everyone else does. Second, I have my own set of personal, cultural, theological, linguistic, and interpretive meanings I have picked up at church, in Sunday school, at home, during my years in a religious high school, and in seminary. And third, I have science. So when I go to read the Bible, I bring science along with it. Now, this lively host of scientific extras that I read when I read the Bible is not essential, let me repeat, not essential to my core understanding of the Bible. These are bonuses, they are supplements, they are new and fun ideas, neither demanded nor contradicted by my basic view of Scripture. And how do I view Scripture? I view it as a human record of Israel's encounter with a real and loving God. It is a human record of Israel's historic encounter with a real and loving God. So if all this science is sort of a bonus, and we'll get to examples next time, but if all these, if when I bring science to the Bible, I just get these sort of, they're kind of extras, non-essentials, why even worry about them? Why even talk about them? I have three reasons. One is that science, in its description of the cosmos with its quasars and its galaxies, does describe the creation of that same real and loving God. Second, I and many others think of these scientific ideas every time we read the Bible, and I can't stop thinking about them. And third, I believe, it's my own personal conviction, that our approach to the Bible should be as free and creative and imaginative as the God who inspired it. God is the creator of all things. And if you look around at creation, you look around at nature, you'll see that God is very free and creative and imaginative. So we who are made in the image of God are free also to be free and creative and imaginative when it comes to reading Scripture. I believe in creativity and imagination and inventiveness when it comes to reading Scripture. There are boundaries, of course, but in my view, those boundaries are very wide. And what I'm going to do is this. In the next installment, next week, I'm going to take three passages of Scripture, some familiar, some less familiar, and tell you and explain to you how science enlarges and animates and makes even more exciting these passages of Scripture. We're going to take one from Genesis, one from the book of Job, and one from the book of Isaiah, all Old Testament stuff. Because I don't know if you know, but virtually all of the passages about creation are in the Old Testament. Sometimes I wish Jesus had said more about creation, but my hunch is that he felt like the Hebrew Bible, that is our Old Testament, already said enough, and he didn't have a whole lot to embellish on or correct on the way that the Old Testament handles creation. So we'll look at three Old Testament passages next week, and we'll see exactly how a view of science makes these passages more exciting than ever. And I'll see you then.